The rest of the day is me talking about scientific fundamentals. Various things that are important in any science course, not just biology. But we'll start that off with this first slide and the difference between quantities and units and what each of these is. Now, speaking of the slide, it's not very many slides, but it's nowhere on the site right now. So if you want to look at this from home again, I will post it, not with the slideshows, I'll post it as a separate link along with the recording from today. So on that current term lecture recordings page. Right? Anyway, quantities and units. Two important things in science. Importantly different in certain ways. Does anyone want to tell me what either of these things is? Yeah. Right. Even more generally than that, I'll say that a quantity is really just anything you can measure and do measure.
And then units is the measurement of whatever.
Yes, units are predefined sizes of measurements that we make, that we measure quantities in. It's hard to put into words, kind of. So it's much better just to use examples. Just anyone give me an example of a quantity. By the way, there's no limit to the number of quantities in the universe. Like I said, it's basically anything that you can measure. So it shouldn't be hard to come up with an example for a quantity.
A dozen,
I can see why you would call that a quantity. That actually is a unit.
So just
12? 12 and a dozen are the same thing, though. That 12 of something is a unit,
okay. Actually.
Because if you say, I'm measuring a dozen, what the hell are you measuring, right? That's why it's not a quantity. The thing that you're measuring is a quantity. What you're measuring it in is the unit.
Like inches? Like
inches is a unit. What is the corresponding quantity for the unit inches? In other words, inches is a unit of what quantity?
Length.
Exactly. Or distance, or width, or height. Those are really all synonyms for the same thing, distance. All right, now you see that the thing that you're measuring is distance. That's the quantity. And you have, for any given quantity, not just distance, a lot of different choices of units to measure that quantity in. Inches is just one of them. So you see the difference there? Inches happens to be a unit in the silly system that, unfortunately, this country hangs on to. Embarrassingly, the United States is one of only three countries in the world remaining that have not switched over officially to the metric system, which is far easier to use and that we'll learn about today, and that is universally used by all scientists, even in those three countries that still use silly system. In case you're interested, the three countries are the United States, Liberia, and Myanmar, I think, are the only three left. Americans are resistant, for some reason, to learn the metric system, which is why we're still using it, despite the silliness. But I tell each section when I do this lecture that, just to show you how resistant we are to change, it was 48 years ago when I was in fifth grade when my teacher said, we're going to learn the metric system today, and you have to pay attention because very soon that's all we'll be using. Because that was the intent. Well, we've come close to using the metric system in the United States. It's still miles per hour on the signs and cups and teaspoons and things like that that are, you know, if I ask you to tell me how many teaspoons there are in an acre foot, you're probably not going to know that, right? Just off the top of your head. But if I ask you how many micrometers there are in a cubic kilometer, you can actually do that in your head once you do some practice. Because the metric system is a decimal system. It's all based on powers of 10. You don't have to remember all kinds of hard-to-remember conversion factors. Well, anyway, that is the difference between units and quantities. We better use at least one more example to drive home this difference. What's another example of a quantity?
Full.
Full?
Yeah. A cup is full.
Well, that's not something that you're actually measuring, though.
What about temperature?
Temperature is a good example of another quantity. Right. And any quantity has choices of units in which to measure that quantity, just like temperature does. Right? You could use the silly system, which is Fahrenheit degrees, or degrees Fahrenheit. Or you could use any of a lot of different temperature scales that have been designed over the years. But just using those two examples, do you have a good feel for the difference between a quantity and a unit? Now, everyone always says yes on this.
I'm still saying no.
You're still saying no? Okay.
I'm still going to be lost with like what I said.
Okay. Okay, now, you're using your dozen.
Okay.
The reason that's a unit is because if I wanted to measure how many people there are, if the population would be the thing I'm measuring, that's a quantity. And I could measure that in millions, that would be a unit, or in dozens, that would be a unit, right?
Okay, I see.
Like 36 dozen is how big the population is. That's putting a number of units to the quantity.
Okay.
You sure?
Yes, I
okay.
Feel that.
Yeah. No. Inches is a unit. Temperature is a quantity. The quantity is the thing that you're measuring. The units are the standard sizes in which you make those measurements. Okay? Yeah. The units are degrees Fahrenheit, because there are also degrees centigrade or Celsius. And that's why we don't just say degrees. Degrees Fahrenheit for the Fahrenheit scale, degrees centigrade for the Celsius or metric scale. And I'll actually talk about temperature scales in a little bit more in a minute. Okay, do we need any more examples for the difference between these two? Because I'm going to refine them, both of them now. Everything I've said about quantities and units is true, but when you get more deeply into it, there are two categories of each of these. There's two kinds of quantities, and there's two kinds of units. They correspond to each other, just like units in general correspond to quantities. The two categories are fundamental and derived. So there are fundamental quantities, there are derived quantities. And corresponding to those quantities, the standard sizes in which we measure those, there are fundamental units and derived units.
Derived.
D-E-R-I-V-E-D. Okay, fundamental, in this sense, means standing on its own. And even though, as I've said, there's no limit to the number of quantities, because you can measure just about anything, almost all of the quantities in the universe are derived quantities. There are surprisingly, maybe to you surprisingly, few fundamental quantities. I forget exactly how many, but roughly 10. Only 10 fundamental quantities in the universe. Those fundamental quantities, each one really stands on its own. Meaning it's not made up of other quantities. Now, maybe this analogy will help, but using chemistry as an analogy, the elements that I just started talking about today are analogous to fundamental quantities. Right? There's only so many of them. Each one is not made up of other elements. It stands by itself. The compounds, which are made up of a collection of elements, are like the derived quantities. And that's true. It just has to be multiple quantities that a quantity is made up of in order for it to be derived. It doesn't have to be multiple kinds. Let me explain what I mean by analogy. An oxygen molecule has two oxygen atoms, right? So that, even though they're both oxygen, it's still multiple atoms making it up. So that molecule is like a derived quantity. But each oxygen atom by itself is fundamental. Does that help at all? Well, let's actually look at some examples of quantities and determine whether you get a feel for it. This isn't a complete list of quantities that we care about in biology, not even close. This is just using some examples. But time is a quantity. First of all, do you recognize that as a quantity and not a unit? You measure time. You can measure it in certain units, like seconds, minutes, and hours. Those are the units. What about the fundamental derived question? What about time? There's only two to guess from. It is fundamental. Time is not made up of other quantities. It is a quantity by itself, fundamental. Okay? And by the way, if any given quantity is fundamental, like time is, then no matter what unit you choose for that quantity, as long as it's a unit of that quantity, like seconds, minutes, hours, days, whatever, if the quantity is fundamental, then any of those units is also, by definition, fundamental. Now, what we have next? Mass. Well, first of all, what is mass? Those are different. Related, correlated. That's a different quantity. Mass is the amount of matter contained in a sample. So how much material stuff is actually there in that sample is the mass. What about whether it's fundamental or derived? It is not derived. That's another fundamental one. What about units? You have choice of units for any of these given quantities. Well, to demonstrate that you actually haven't even learned the silly system yet, what is the silly system unit for mass? No, pounds is a unit of weight. And weight and mass are not the same thing. So this usually comes up, and I'm glad it did, because this is important to understand the difference between. A lot of people get this wrong, including instructors. Like I said, mass is the amount of material something's made of. Weight is just one example of a force. All weights are forces, not all forces are weights. Okay, so weight is specifically force due to gravity. And the reason people confuse weight and mass is that the weight depends on the mass. The more massive an object is, that the more weight is exerted as a force. Okay? But they are not the same thing, right? They're not the same quantity. And you can easily demonstrate, well, not easily. You could demonstrate this by stepping on a bathroom scale and then going out into space and stepping on that bathroom scale. When you step on a scale, what you're doing is exerting your weight as a force onto the scale, right? So what you're directly measuring with that instrument is your weight, or the weight of whatever you put on the scale, not the mass, right? And therefore, the units that read out on that should be units of weight. Well, in most of the world, the scales are really wrong. Most of the world uses the metric system, but the scales that are sold in the United States, they really have two rows of numbers, right? The bigger numbers on the bottom usually are pounds, and that's correct because pounds are units of weight, units of force. But then above that, in a lot of scales, you have the smaller number, which is what? Kilograms. And kilograms is not a unit of weight. Kilograms is a unit of mass. And that's not what you're measuring. So you step on the scale on Earth, you get however many pounds, and it will say some number of kilograms. Then you go out into outer space, you step on the scale, or the moon, we'll say. Your weight will be roughly 1/6 of what it is here. But the scale will still be correct, right? The scale will go down because it's true that you're exerting less weight on the moon. But it will also say you're now made up of less stuff. Your mass has gone down because it's fewer kilograms. That's wrong. Your mass has stayed exactly the same. It's still your body, right? It's just that you're no longer exerting as much weight because you're not in as strong a gravity field. So it shouldn't be kilograms, which is a mass unit. It should be the metric unit of weight. Does anyone know what that is? It's not grams. Grams is mass. What is it? Did anyone say it? No, that's a unit of weight, but it's not metric. That's the silly system. The metric unit of weight is the newton. So if you want to give your weight in metric terms, you shouldn't give it in kilograms, you should give it in newtons. Now the reason that we usually do use kilograms and why the scales use it and get away with it is that the scale makers are making the pretty reasonable assumption that you're only going to be using this on the surface of the Earth. And so they really just are calculating your mass based on your weight, with the assumption that you're going to use it only on Earth. But true, if you want to express a force, whether it's weight or any other force, the proper metric unit is the newton. Named, of course, after Newton, who was important in gravity, in studying gravity, right? Well, mathematically, what did Newton tell us about forces? Force equals what? Right, F equals ma, force equals mass times acceleration. And so when you express that this way, that should tell you that any unit of force, including all weights, is a derived quantity because it's made up of mass and acceleration. Mass is a quantity, acceleration is a quantity. If you have more than one quantity making up another quantity, that combined quantity is by definition derived. And as a matter of fact, acceleration just by itself is already derived because acceleration is distance per time per time. It's made up of three quantities, two the same and one different. You see that? And when you put mass in the mix, force is even more derived. Therefore, all units of force, pounds, ounces, whatever, are derived units because the corresponding quantity is derived. You get a feel for the derived and fundamental now? Yes, I said, well, in this specific example, I said that force is clearly derived when you look at the equation because you can see that it's made up of the quantities mass and acceleration. All any derived quantity has to be made up of is two or more quantities, whether the same as each other or not. I also said that just acceleration by itself is already derived because it's made up of distance and time and time. What about length? That's next on the list. Fundamental or derived? What is it made up of? Well, length and distance really refer to the same thing, as I was saying. Width, length, height, distance all mean the same thing. The difference between two points in space. So it's just another word for distance. And it is not derived. It's fundamental. So it seems like most things are fundamental. Well, on the list, that happens to be true because fundamental quantities are important, but the vast majority of quantities are made up of other quantities and therefore are derived. These are exceptions. What about volume? Why do you say that? That's right. Volume is derived because it's made up of three distances. We use different words for them, height, width, and length, but they're really all distances, right? So this is an example of something that's being derived even though you're using the same quantity multiple times, kind of like an oxygen molecule versus an oxygen atom, right? A water molecule has two different kinds of atoms in it. That would make it derived. An oxygen molecule only has one kind of atom, but it has two of them. So that also makes it derived. Similarly with volume. And area, for that matter, right? Area is made up of two distances, length and width. So it's derived. And therefore, any volume, since volume is derived, any unit of volume, like cubic centimeters or milliliters or liters or teaspoons, those are all, or fluid ounces, those are all derived. Force, I've already told you, is derived for this reason. What about temperature? It is fundamental. One of the very few. There have been all kinds of different temperature scales devised over the centuries. There's three that are really in wide use still today. One of which is what you probably use as Americans, which is what? Fahrenheit scale, which has units called degrees Fahrenheit, the symbol for the degree plus F for Fahrenheit. And, this is part of the silliness. What is the boiling point of water in the Fahrenheit scale? 212, if we're assuming one atmosphere of pressure. So that's one tick mark on the scale. What about freezing of water? 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And then notice that there's 180 ticks between 32 and 212. 180, right? Well, you can measure those same temperatures on the centigrade scale, which has units of degrees centigrade, that's metric. And what are the corresponding temperatures for boiling of water? What is it? 100 degrees centigrade or Celsius, those are the same thing. What about freezing? 0 centigrade. Notice it's a decimal system. It's based on powers of 10. It's based on water itself. But anyway, that same range in temperatures, 100, corresponds to 180 in Fahrenheit. Well, 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. And that's why in conversions between centigrade and Fahrenheit, you have that 1.8 conversion factor. Well, the centigrade temperature scale is metric, but there's another metric scale that we use, which is what? Yeah, the Kelvin scale, which can also be called the absolute temperature scale. And there is no such thing as a degree Kelvin. So don't write that and don't say it. Unlike the other two scales, there are no degrees in the Kelvin scale. The units are called Kelvins. So if you would report room temperature, for instance, is approximately 300 Kelvins. All right, not degrees Kelvin. Well, why is this called the absolute temperature scale? That has to do with what temperature means. Temperature is an indication of the average speed of the particles in a sample. Particles making up even a solid are moving. They're bouncing off of each other. And every individual particle is moving in its own direction and at its own speed. But if you consider a whole population, all the particles in a sample, you could theoretically measure the speed of each one of them individually and then compute an average, right? That average speed for whatever the sample is gives you the temperature. And therefore, the faster the things are moving on average, the higher the temperature. Okay? Well, notice that the Fahrenheit and centigrade scale both have zeros. Zero Fahrenheit is much colder than the freezing of water, right? Zero centigrade is right at freezing of water for one atmosphere of pressure. But they both feature negative values as well. You can go below zero. Not so with the absolute temperature scale. It's absolute temperature because it's based on the definition of temperature. If temperature is the average speed of the particles, that means there's a lower limit, right? You can't get things any colder than no movement at all. There's no such thing as negative movement, right? That would still be movement. So when there is no movement at all, that by definition is absolute zero, as cold as something can be. And just by reference, that's on the centigrade scale, negative 273.15 degrees centigrade. And an even greater negative number for Fahrenheit, since those units are smaller. So that's as cold as anything can be. By the way, these two metric scales, the Kelvin scale and the centigrade scale, even though only one of the units is called degrees, the Kelvin, the unit, is exactly the same size as a degree centigrade. They're just displaced, right? So it's an easy conversion to go from centigrade to Kelvin. You just have to, whatever the centigrade degree is, you have to add 273.15, which is why roughly 300 Kelvins is room temperature, right? That would be 27 degrees centigrade, which is what most rooms are, roughly. Okay. But that's fundamental, and therefore any temperature unit is fundamental. Everyone good. Now, you can give me an example of a fundamental quantity, a fundamental unit, a derived quantity, and a derived unit. Once again, everyone always says yes. And then the quiz says otherwise. So, ask me again if you don't know, and practice thinking about it. Number of particles I didn't talk about. Particles can be anything. Planets, houses, molecules. But number of particles, counting something, is also fundamental. And there's all kinds of different units. Like you said, dozen is a unit. That is a unit of number of particles, actually, whatever the particles are. And certain big things, it might be appropriate to count in dozens. Or to measure in dozens, right? But when the particles are so tiny, that it takes a shitload of them just for you to be able to see that sample, then it's inconvenient to use units that are small like dozen. But notice that dozen is only a number. It just means 12. It doesn't mean anything else, just 12, right? Similarly, the mole, which is a unit for the number of particles, is just a number. You can count anything in moles, but it's such a huge number that it's ridiculous to count anything macroscopic with moles, like houses or people. It is just a number by itself. And what is that number called? After whose honor? Anyone know? Avogadro's number is what is the value of the mole. In other words, one mole equals Avogadro's number, which is roughly 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power. That is scientific notation. If you were writing that in standard notation, it would be 6022 and then 19 more zeros, or 20 more zeros. A huge number. Why do we bother with such a huge number? Like I said, if you're counting things that are so tiny that it takes a hell of a lot before you even see them, it becomes convenient to use a big unit. Specifically, what I'm talking about as particles are atoms and molecules. Now, on the periodic table, you have an integer for each box. That's the atomic number, number of protons. We'll talk more about that. But you also have a non-integer below each one in this version of the periodic table. It's the red numbers. You can think of that number in two ways. One is that it's in units called atomic mass units. And so that number, whatever it is, which is different for each element, let's say calcium, 40.078. If you think about that number as being atomic mass units, which you can, then that means a single calcium atom has as its mass, or is if you measure its mass, it is 40.078 atomic mass units. Okay? Which doesn't mean much, but it's true. But you can also think of it this way. Each of these can also have units of grams per mole. And that's the practical way of thinking about it. What that means is that, for once again using calcium, if I were to very carefully, using a high resolution instrument, measure 40.078 grams of calcium, then I would have one mole of calcium atoms, because it's that many grams per mole. That means I would have 40.078 times 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd atoms of calcium. And 40 grams is not that much, so that gives you an appreciation of just how tiny atoms are, because that is a huge number. Okay? But anyway, that's what moles are. And that's just a number, just like a dozen. What you are measuring is the quantity, like number of atoms or number of planets. Okay? The unit is the number itself. Let's go on then, unless there are questions. Yeah. Well, what do you mean come with it?
Like, if the quantity is fundamental, then does that mean that the units are fundamental?
Yes, that's exactly. Any fundamental quantity has only fundamental units. Any derived quantity has only derived units. Now we can talk about the metric system. Let me turn this light off again. The metric system, you can learn the basics of. It takes practice to use it, but you can learn the basics of it in 15 minutes, which is why we should have done it decades ago. And the reason it's so quick to learn is because it is decimal, meaning based on 10, based on powers of 10. And all you really have to do is memorize some quantities. I should say memorize some units for quantities. The quantities don't have a system. The quantities are the quantities. Units, the units are metric or non-metric. So for any given quantity, like length, for instance, distance, there is a metric base unit. What is that, for instance, for distance? What's the metric base unit of distance? The meter. And similarly for any other quantity. If you're talking about weight, like I said, it would be Newton. If you're talking about mass, it would be grams. So you have to memorize the base units for the various quantities, just like you had to for the silly system. And those units are fine to use in certain instances. For instance, depending on the size of the thing you're measuring, if you're measuring mass, for instance, it might be, let's just say meters, it's easier to visualize. It might be appropriate to measure something in meters because of how big it is, how long it is. But if it's the distance from here to Jupiter, yes, you technically can measure it in meters, but it's going to be a hell of a lot of meters, right? The units are kind of too small for such a big measurement. Or the other way around. You know, if you're measuring distance between an atomic nucleus and the electrons in the first shell, that's a tiny distance. So it's going to be, yes, you could measure it and express it in meters, but it's going to be 0.000, many zeros until you finally get to a non-zero number. It's just a pain in the ass to use units that are either too big or too small for the job, is the point. So the metric system gives you many choices of units, all based on the base unit. They're just multiples above or below that unit. That's what's illustrated by the table. No unit is given here because these same prefixes or prefaces apply to all units, regardless of the quantity. But these are multipliers, these prefixes. And notice that there's nothing listed in the middle row. That's the base. So, for instance, if your quantity is mass, then the unit would be gram, right? You could use that. But if you want to use a bigger unit, you could go up one row in this and use kilograms instead. The kilo prefix means 1,000 of those, 1,000 times as big as the base unit. So a single kilogram is just another way of saying 1,000 grams. All right? But it's its own unit. A kilogram is a unit that's 1,000 times as big as a gram. Okay. 1,000, though, notice, is 3 orders of magnitude bigger than 1. What is an order of magnitude? It is a power of 10. So if you increase something by 1 order of magnitude, that means you make it 10 times bigger. To go from 1 to 10 is 1 order of magnitude. 1 power of 10 is another way of thinking of it. If you make something 1,000 times as big, you're increasing it 3 orders of magnitude, because 1,000 is 10 cubed, 10 to the third. Do you see all that? 3 orders of magnitude difference between 1,000 and 1. And that's why you have the orders of magnitude shown here. The middle one is not increased or decreased. The base is just times 1. Well, 1 mathematically is 10 to the 0 power. 1,000 is 10 to the third power. So from 10 to the 0 to 10 to the third is 3 orders of magnitude increase. It's 1,000 times bigger. And every one of these steps in this table is a jump of 3 orders of magnitude, either bigger or smaller. So from the base to kilo, 3 orders of magnitude, 1,000 times bigger. From kilo to mega, also 3 orders of magnitude, A mega meter is 1,000 times as big as 1 kilometer. But compared to the base, a megameter versus a meter, for instance, is 10 to the 6th times as big, 1,000,000 times as big, 6 orders of magnitude. Every step individually is 3 orders of magnitude, and they add up. Okay, is that part clear? And that's true for every step in this table. Now, every one of these prefixes has an abbreviation you can use instead of the whole prefix. So if you're writing it out, you'd write kilograms, but you could just say kg, because g is the symbol for grams. You never use the symbol for the prefix by itself, because it doesn't mean anything, right? You have to use the prefix symbol plus the symbol for the actual unit. But notice that except for kilo, all of the ones above the base have capital letters and capital symbols. That's to remind us that those ones are making the unit bigger rather than smaller than the base. The capital letter tells you that. And to be consistent, they would have used a capital K for kilo. Why did they not? It wasn't to intentionally be inconsistent. They would have if they could have. Why couldn't they? Because what? No?
Isn't it Kelvin?
Right. K, capital K, already means Kelvin. So they were already using that symbol. You can't reuse symbols or there's ambiguity. That's the only reason it's a small K. But notice that all the ones below the base, which are making it smaller than the base unit by 3 orders of magnitude each, those have small letters, lowercase letters, to make you remember that. So the next one down from the base is milli. Milli means 1,000th of. So it takes 1,000 milli whatevers to make up one whatever. All right? And you should get it clear in your mind that if you're comparing two different units, expressing the same thing in two different units, whichever the bigger unit is that you use, you're going to have fewer of them, right, for the sample. Just like the old pizza joke of how many slices do you want me to cut this into, 6 or 8? And the guy says, 8, because I'm really hungry. Well, you're not getting any more pizza, right? You're just using smaller units. So you have more of them. That'll become important when we talk next about dimensional analysis. But it's 3 orders of magnitude smaller, milli is, compared to the base. So it's 10 to the negative third, which is 1/1,000th. And then 1/1,000th of that is another step down, micro. But compared to the base, that's 6 orders of magnitude. 1,000,000th is what micro means. 1,000,000th of the base. In other words, it takes 1,000,000 micrometers to equal 1 meter. Right? Is that clear?
Could you use a byte? Or
no? Yeah.
But going down?
Yes. Well, actually, no, because of how computers are designed. A bit actually can be subdivided because a bit can be either 1 or 0. And so we call those what? A nibble, I think. A 1 is a nibble and a 0 is a nibble. But that you can't divide them beyond that just because of how we designed that. Otherwise, you could. And by the way, when you say it's in computers, when you say a kilobyte, it's really not 1,000 bytes. It's 1,024 because that's 2 to the 8th rather than, it's based on binary rather than decimal. Anyway, they're all small letters to show you that they're getting smaller. M for milli, reasonably enough. Well, we couldn't reuse M for micro, which also starts with an M. So this symbol is used, and it's not a U, so don't write it as a U. Don't use U on your computer if you're trying to write the symbol for micro. That is a mu, which is a Greek M. It has a tail, I guess I'll call it, even though it's in the front, that extends below the letter itself. That is a mu. This is a U. All right? A mu is an M, so they just use a different version of M to stand for micro. The rest of them make sense, though. Well, if you look at this entire range, from yocto to iota, that's 10 to the negative 24th, a ridiculously tiny number, to 10 to the positive 24th, a ridiculously huge number. Way bigger a range than we need in biology, but that's wide enough for anything that you're measuring to fall into. I mean, it's hard to appreciate how big a range that is, actually. But anyway, depending on what the science is, yes, they'll use these huge or very tiny prefixes, not so much in biology, which is why I'm not requiring you to memorize all of those prefixes. But in this table, we can see what you do, what you should memorize. This is almost the same table as the previous one. The red ones were there in the previous table, but these are too big or too small for biologists to care about. So don't bother memorizing those. All right, the red ones. The white ones were in the previous table. You have to know all of those. The yellow ones weren't in the other table. They're stuck in between rows that were in the previous table. And that's because, and they happen just on either side of the base. So this is just to give you even more versatility with respect to the choice of unit size you have. Instead of jumping three orders of magnitude above the base, we can jump just one order of magnitude 10 times, or two orders of magnitude 100 times. Deca, with a K, means 10 times the base. So a decagram is 10 grams, right? Hecto means 100 of. So it's 100 times the base. A hectosecond is 100 seconds. And similarly, one step down, one order of magnitude down, is deci. Don't confuse that with deca. They both have to do with 10. They both mean 10, which is why a 10-year period is a decade. Deci means one-tenth, though. So it takes 10 of those smaller deci units to equal one base unit. 10 decimeters to equal 1 meter. And centi is a hundredth of, right? That's why we call a hundredth of a dollar a cent. So those are just more versatile right around the base. Those, the white ones and the yellow ones that you need to know. All right, everyone clear on that? Let's go on to then the next major topic, which is dimensional analysis. Dimensional analysis is used for several different reasons in science, but I'm just going to give you one use of it here today, which is for the purposes of conversion problems. And proper use of dimensional analysis is very rare among students. They will do just about anything to do this properly, to not do it properly. Most students want to just deal only with numbers because they just want to punch it into a calculator and hit equals, and you don't enter any units into a calculator. Well, that's not the right way to do it, and it can easily give you the wrong answer. The proper way of using dimensional analysis shows you, as you're doing it, that you're setting it up properly. But why is this called dimensional analysis? Well, dimension is really just another word for unit. And that's why the proper use of dimensional analysis means you have to be writing these units down as you do this procedure that I'm about to demonstrate. But if you're talking about a conversion problem, which is what we're using dimensional analysis for, then one measurement is really all that's made, right? The original measurement is made. That's your starting point. and you're just converting that into some other units. You're not making a new measurement, right? In other words, the original measurement, whatever that value is, that let's say it's distance, because that's what this example is, that distance doesn't change when you convert the units. It's the same distance for the answer as it was before you converted it. Okay, now keep that in mind for a second, because converting it really, mathematically speaking, is just serial multiplication. Meaning multiplying things over and over, one after another. Now, in math, what are the things that, what do we call the things that we multiply? No, that's the answer. So after you multiply, the answer is the product. What are the things that you're actually multiplying by each other called? Factors, exactly. When you're adding things, they're called addends. When you're multiplying them, they're called factors. And each of these things listed in the string here is a factor, because they're all being multiplied, right? Well, the first one shown here is simply what you're starting with, what you're given in the problem. A measurement originally. And by the way, I should say that this is actually wrong. There should be a decimal point right after the 150 up there. And there should be right after this 150. It's just not in this slide. 150 point is what it should be. But anyway, 150 miles, that's the original distance. That's what's given in the problem. And so that's going to always be the first factor. Now, it's given as 150 miles. But since all of these other factors I'm just about to talk about are in fraction form, I just like to make everything a fraction to be consistent. You can do that with any number just by putting it over 1. All right? All of these other factors, besides that first one, are examples of conversion factors. Now think about what's mathematically being done here. I'm telling you that you're starting with a distance that does not change from beginning to end. But in the process, you're going to take that distance and multiply it by a bunch of things. In math, there's only one way that I can multiply something by a bunch of things and not change the value. What am I talking about? Right. The only thing you can multiply something by and not change its value is the multiplicative identity, which is 1. Since the distance isn't changing, the final distance equals the beginning distance, and therefore all of these conversion factors have to equal 1. Is that clear? So they're just different representations of the number 1. There are infinitely many ways that you can represent 1 as a fraction, right? What has to be true for any one of those representations of 1 as a fraction? Or just give me an example of a fraction that equals 1. 1 over 1. What's special about that? And all of the other fractions that equal 1. Right, the numerator has to equal the denominator, and they can't be 0. So any non-zero number divided by that same number equals 1. Right? Pi over pi, even though those aren't integers, is still equal to 1. That's true for all of these conversion factors. Each individual conversion factor considered by itself is equal to 1 because the top equals the bottom. They're just expressed in different units. That's why they're called conversion units. All right? But since they're all equal to 1, that starting measurement, in this case 150 miles, times 1, times 1, times 1, as many times as you want, is not going to change the distance. You're just re-expressing it in other units. Well, how many conversion factors you use is up to you and up to what you have at your disposal. You could use just 1 if you knew the correct conversion factor. In this case, If you knew the correct conversion factor to go directly from miles to what it's asking you for, which is millimeters, then you could do it in one step. But most people don't have that memorized. So you do it stepwise, using the ones that you have at your disposal. Okay? Now, let me just, instead of following that one exactly, let me just give you a similar problem and do it step by step up here. Just changing the numbers. So if I say 24.2 miles equals how many micrometers? Notice that's a mu. That is a conversion factor, right? It's the same thing I'm asking here, just different units. Well, you should approach these conversion problems using dimensional analysis exactly the same way in terms of a procedure. Always start the same way, which is to write down what you are given. That's the first factor, what you are given, which is what in this case? 24.2 miles, not 24.2. It's not dimensional analysis unless you write the units out. Not because it's not just because it's the right way of doing it, but because it will be an incorrect answer, even if the number is right. Okay? So 24.2 miles, and I'm going to make that a fraction simply by putting it over 1. Now, the very next step, and in fact, each additional step, should be approached exactly, almost mindlessly, like this. Right now, if we were to quit right now, we would be in miles, where we started with, right? We know we're not done, because the question's asking for micrometers, not miles. And there aren't any miles in the answer. There can't be. So we need to get rid of the miles, right? And that's why I say almost unthinkingly, you make an empty fraction and you get rid of those miles by putting them in the opposite direction, either up or down compared to where they are now. Right now it's in the numerator, so before you think about any numbers, you just write miles down here so that they will cancel. And on top, in this case top, you can put any units you want that you know a conversion between with miles. Now here I use the yards one. You might not have memorized that in the silly system. Do you know how many feet there are? 5,280. 5,280 feet in 1 mile. Now these are the same distance, right? That's why this equals 1. But like I was saying before, that whole, the distance, if you express that in big units, like miles, you're going to have fewer of them, like the 6 pieces of pizza, compared to if you express the same distance in smaller units, you'll have a bigger number of them. So the smaller number in a conversion factor always goes with the bigger unit. You see what I'm saying there? Okay, if we were to stop there, it would already be converted, but we would be in feet, the only thing that hasn't canceled. That's why we know we're not done. So you just use the same procedure. We need to get rid of feet now, so they'll cancel. We can go from feet to anything we want. I'm going to go to inches. You've grown up knowing probably that there are 12 inches in 1 feet, 1 foot. Once again, the bigger unit has the smaller number. Well, it's valuable to get to inches because this is not only a conversion factor, a conversion problem. This is an example of conversion between systems, starting in this case with the silly system going to the metric system. Not all of them are like that. You can convert silly to silly, metric to metric. But in this case, we're going from silly to metric. And when you're doing that in length, or in distance at least, there is one conversion factor that you should bother to memorize. And that's because it's not an approximation. It is exact. And that's the conversion between inches and centimeters. That's why I wanted to get to inches, because now the next step is to go from inches, which is in the silly system, to centimeters so that we can make the jump to the metric system. All right? Here's the one that you should memorize. There are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. By that, I mean it's not 2.54 rounded. You could express it as 2.54, as 2.54000. You can add as many zeros as you want because it has infinite precision since it's exact. Just like you can say there's 12.0000 months in a year. It's not approximate. All right? Most conversion factors are approximate. So this allows us to have no reduction in the number of our significant figures. That's why it's important. But anyway, if we stop now, we would be in the metric system, but we're not done yet. Since we bothered to do this properly, we know that we would be in centimeters. We need to be in micrometers. If you're experienced with the metric system, it's really easy to go from centimeters to micrometers in one step. But until you practice, meaning now, I don't want you to do that. Because you want to use what eventually will be your memorized knowledge of the prefixes. So, if you are in the metric system but not where you need to be yet, temporarily go from where you are, which in this case is centimeters, to the base, which would be meters. That way, you can remember what centi means and it can have meaning, because all those prefixes are based on the base. Centi means 1/100th of, right? So it is smaller than a meter. Meter is bigger, therefore it has the smaller number. 1 meter equals 100 centimeters. Because centi means 1/100th of. Is that all clear? Then, even though you're not done yet, you can go from the base, now that you've been there, to where you need to be, also based on prefixes. So you go from meters to micrometers, and then you remember what you've memorized micro to be, which is 1/1,000,000th of, right? The smaller one gets the bigger number. So it's 1,000,000 micrometers. I'm going to write that as 10 to the 6th, but you could write it out as 1 followed by 6 zeros in 1 meter. Now that's just the setup, but by carefully doing it properly this way, you can convince yourself that you've set it up correctly because the only thing that hasn't canceled is exactly what the question is asking for in terms of units. If you only focus on the numbers, because that's what you want to punch in, you can easily flip one of these upside down and get a totally ridiculous and wrong answer. So don't do that. And also don't do it because I'm telling you not to do it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, anytime. So that's the setup. Now it's just a matter of computing it, which you can also do incorrectly, even with a computer. I mean, even with a calculator. You should get in the habit, when all that that is involved is multiplication and division, of hitting equals only once. Multiplication and division are equal in the hierarchy of mathematical operations. That means you can do them in any order and still come up with the answer, the same answer. All right? 3 times 2 is the same as 2 times 3, in other words. 2 times 3 divided by 6 is the same as 2 divided by 6 times 3. You can do them in any order. As long as you are always hitting times for anything that's in the numerator, and you're always hitting divided by for anything that's in the denominator. Now, you don't have to bother with the ones, of course, right? They're not going to change anything, but you could do it. Usually, though, you won't have all but one thing be ones. What I'm saying about equal in the hierarchy, though, is that you could enter this as 5280 divided by 100 times 25.4 divided by 1 times 10 to the 6th. Why would you do that, though? It makes much more sense to just go straight across the top, straight across the bottom. Just making sure you hit times for these and divided by for all of these. Then you hit equals one time, and you don't run into rounding errors. So did anyone do that? I didn't do this in my head. Someone do that. Tell me what you get. Remembering that this is 10 to the 6th, it's a million. This is the boring part of the recording.
That's what, 1 million?
This is a million by itself, yes. Did you get one? What is it? 8, 9?
Yes.
Times 10 to the what?
10th.
Now, it didn't. Does it say 3.89 or did it say 8, 9 something else?
4, 6, 1 after the 8, 9.
Okay. So the let me just write that temporarily. 3.89, what'd you say, 4? 4, 6, 1 times 10 to the what was it? 10th? Okay, first of all, this is not the answer for two reasons. One is that this is just the magnitude of the answer. The magnitude is the numerical size. This is not the answer because you have no idea what the units are. Is this 3.89 light years? No. Well, you don't know, I'm saying. You have to have both the magnitude and the dimension, which is the unit. All right. So the answer would be this many, or not the answer, the closer to the correct answer would be that many micrometers. Don't forget to write the units. But that's still not the answer, even though the calculator says that's the numerical answer, because we have more resolution here than we're allowed to have. We have more significant figures than we're allowed to use. How do we know how many we can use? Well, every one of these ones except this, all these conversion factors are exact. So they have as many significant figures as you need if you just write zeros after them, point zeros. They don't constrain the number of significant figures at all. The only thing that constrains is what you started with as a measurement, right? And there's three significant figures in this 24.2. Three significant figures. So your answer can't have more than three. That means you need to round this four. I mean, you have to round this nine either up or not at all, depending on what comes after it. Four is less than five, so we just keep it rounded at nine. We can't tell what these values are here, really, even though the calculator tells you, because the instrument we use to measure it doesn't have that resolution. All right, now, times 10 to the 10th micrometers, that would be an acceptable answer, assuming that you punched that in correctly. That would be how you write your complete answer. But that's really not, that's almost the end, but that's not the final step. One step that a lot of people skip is the final step of asking yourself whether that makes any sense. This is what, a huge number or a tiny number? Okay, now does that make sense for it to be a huge number of micrometers when you started out with 24.2 miles? Yes, because micrometers are tiny. So the answer should be huge. If you ended up with 10 to the negative 10th, that doesn't pass that final test of making sense. So remember to ask yourself that. All right. Does that example help?
Can you explain how we
enter
into the calculator?
Yes. You're using only multiplication and division. So you just, the easiest way is to simply go all the numerators first, hitting times each time. And then divided by, divided by, divided by, divided by, and then equals. And you can just skip the ones because they don't make any difference, but you can put them in if you want. And so another question I always get yes as an answer to, especially by this point of the day, is, can you do this now that I've demonstrated it? And I've had a couple people do it correctly, but most people get this wrong. This is why this first quiz is usually the lowest. So don't expect just to listen to me and be able to do this. Practice it with some practice conversion problems. Doing it correctly, writing the units down to ensure that you're setting it up properly. Okay? That's not the end of the performance, though. That's just the end of that topic. Oh, it's not even really the end of that topic. I have another thing to say about significant figures and scientific notation. Let's go back to this original example, which I said was erroneous because it didn't have that decimal point in it. If you have a number like 24.2, that is clear to anyone reading it how many significant figures there are, because they're non-zero digits. So they're all significant. But notice that 150 has a trailing zero. And a trailing zero, unless it's followed by a decimal point, is ambiguous, because you don't know whether that zero is significant or not. You know the one is, you know the five is, so there's at least two significant figures here, but there's either two or three depending on whether the zero is significant. And that's why you don't really want to write 150 if you care about significant figures. You don't want to write it as 150 because the reader can't tell. All right? 150 is standard notation. But in science, we often use scientific notation, and there's two reasons for that, one of which is much more important than the other. Scientific notation, though, refers to expressing a value as something times some, but times 10 to some exponent. So in this case, we could write 150 in scientific notation as 1.5 times 10 squared, right? Or we could write it as 1.50 times 10 squared. Those are the same thing to a calculator, but they're not the same thing. This brings up the two reasons for why we use scientific notation. The less important reason is that scientific notation is just more convenient if you're dealing with a huge number or a tiny number, because it's a pain in the ass to write 0.0000 something. It's much easier to write scientific notation times 10 to the negative whatever. Similarly with very huge numbers like Avogadro's number. You don't want to write out all those 20 zeros after 6.02. Okay? So that's one reason, just convenience. But that's not the important scientific reason. The other reason is that using scientific notation eliminates any ambiguity with respect to the number of significant figures that a value has. That's why these two things are different. If the zero in this 150 is not significant, then you would write it as 1.5 times 10 squared. If it is significant, you would write it as 1.50 times 10 squared. Whatever comes before the times 10 in scientific notation tells you unambiguously how many significant figures there are. You count all of them whether they're zero or not. So you know by at a glance that this has three significant figures, this one has two. Is that clear? Yeah.
There's no significant because like in my mind, whatever zero comes off of like after a decimal, like you can add as many zeros.
You can, but only if you have the ability to resolve a measurement to that high resolution. And I'm going to talk about that after this. But for instance, you know, if I measure your height in centimeters, because that's the only increments that are on my stick, no smaller tick marks between centimeters, and your height is not right at a tick mark, I am not justified to saying, well, that looks like about 0.4, because I don't have an instrument, that stick, that can tell the difference between 1 centimeter or between partial centimeters. So I wouldn't be allowed to say point something. I would have to just round it off to a centimeter, the nearest centimeter. That's what significant figures are all about.
So like if it wasn't, instead of saying like 0.4, you're saying like 0.5?
If I could tell that your height is greater than 139 centimeters and less than 140, yes, it's reasonable to say that it's 139 point something, but I can't say what that point number is. So I have to say either 139 or 140. That's all I'm able to report to. If, though, I had marks for millimeters, tenths of centimeters, then I could say 139 point however many marks it is. So it depends on the measurement, the quality of the instrument that you're using to make the measurement.
So what are you saying? Like, there's three significant things with the 1.50 and then there's two.
Well, this 150, if I measured distance and it was 150 units, it doesn't matter what the units are actually, let's just say miles. But I'm using a ridiculous tape measure that only has tick marks, one per mile. Then I could report to the nearest 1 mile, and therefore this zero would be significant. If I were using an even more ridiculous tape measure in which the only tick marks are 10 miles apart, then I can't report anything more fine than 10 miles. And so I would say, even if it would look like 148, I'd have to report that as 150 because I have to go to the nearest 10 miles. That's the constraint of the of my resolution. Does that make it clearer?
I don't know.
Well, depending on which of those I do, this number has either two or three significant figures. It just depends on what I did originally. You can't tell from just the number, and that's the point. But if I know what I did and I know that this zero is actually significant, then when I report it, I want to report it in scientific notation so that the reader knows just by looking at it that it has exactly three significant figures. You can't tell from this version, which is standard notation. This you can tell. If you were given this instead, you would know the zero is insignificant because there's only two significant figures in the measurement. In this one, it's easy because there's no zeros involved. But whenever zeros are involved, then it's trailing zeros, then it's ambiguous. However, like I said, if you put a point after that, then that means the zero, by definition, is significant. So this does not equal this. It equals this. Okay? Yeah.
So then if you put 24.0, then our final answer would have to have.
That's right. If I actually had the ability in my measuring device to go to the nearest hundredth of a mile, then I could write 24.20. But I can't unless I have that ability. And in a problem, you're given someone else's measurement, someone else's data, and you can't go to greater resolution than they used. That's why you have to constrain yourself to a certain minimum number or maximum number of significant figures. Okay? Just helping or hurting? Okay? Well, that's the end of the slideshow, so I can turn that off, but it's not the end of me. I still have a few more definitions to give you, kind of as an encore. Three terms I want to distinguish are accuracy, precision, and resolution. These are important in making measurements, which we do all the time in science. Now, does anyone want to tell me what the first of those is? Accuracy? In your own words? No, it's not. The average requires, well, it doesn't require, but usually involves multiple measurements that are then added together and divided by the number of measurements. That's a statistic. It's not a measurement itself. It's a statistic based on measurements. But anyway, it's not to say that accuracy is a measurement either, but an average is not accuracy.
How exact something is?
But what do you mean by exact? Yes, accuracy is closeness to the truth. You know, anything that you measure, there is an actual real value for that, right? You're trying to get at it by measuring it. but any given measurement is going to have some error involved with it. How close you get to the truth, though, is the accuracy. And a lot of textbooks use the very good analogy of throwing a dart at a dartboard to represent the taking of a measurement. Here, the truth, the true value, is the very center of the dartboard. The throwing of the dart is the taking of the measurement. If it lands very close to the center, that means that measurement had high accuracy. If you throw it way off the board, very low accuracy, right? That accuracy makes sense when you're talking about just one measurement or more, but one doing it makes sense even in the case of a single measurement. On the other hand, the next one, precision, doesn't really make sense when you're only talking about one measurement. Precision is repeatability. And therefore, since it's repeatability, you have to be talking about multiple measurements. So using a scale, again, as an example for a machine that, or an instrument that measures something, you could have the same sample that isn't changing and measure it three different times or as many times as you want on a scale, right? If it is a high precision instrument, you should be getting almost exactly the same measurement every time. Repeatable. That's high precision. In the dartboard analogy, that's like throwing three darts, making three measurements. And if you have a tight grouping, that's high precision. Notice, though, that you could have a tight grouping on the wall, not even close to the bullseye. That would be high precision, low accuracy. And actually, you could also have low precision and high accuracy. It's more rare. But in the dartboard analogy, you could be all over the wall in a triangle. None of them hits the board, so they're all individually low accuracy. But if the average of those three, the center is right in the middle of that triangle, then it would be high resolution. Low precision, high accuracy. Sorry. Obviously, in science, we want high precision and high accuracy. Then the final one is resolution. And I've already talked about this today, even though I hadn't defined it yet, when we were talking about significant figures. Resolution is a noun, but the corresponding verb is resolve. To resolve means to discriminate, it's another word for it, which is a word that means to tell the difference between, right? In social context, we think it has a negative connotation because we don't want to discriminate people based on sex, for instance. Even if we know there are different sexes, we want to pretend that we can't tell the difference. That's why I say we don't discriminate. But when you're making scientific measurements, discrimination means you can tell that two different things are actually different from each other. You can tell them apart if you have high enough resolution, if you're able to resolve them. Now, one example of this, visual example, would be putting two marks on the wall. If I go up on the board and put two marks some distance apart, standing close enough to the board, our eyes are able to resolve those. In other words, we can tell that there's two separate marks there. Because our retinas have high enough resolution to be able to distinguish or discriminate the two points. If you stand back farther and farther, though, that eventually there will be a distance at which it looks like there's only one point there, when there's in fact two. You don't have enough resolution at that point to be able to tell them apart, which is what I was saying to you on the length. If you don't have enough resolution in your measurement to tell the difference between 0.1 and 0.2 and up to 0.9, then you have to round it to the nearest whole number. Another example using bathroom scales. It would be, if I tell you to stand on the bathroom scale and report your weight to me, you'll tell me some number. You're still standing on it. And then I'll hand you a postage stamp and I'll say, now what does it say? What's the combined weight of you and the postage stamp? Well, it's going to be the same number, right? Because that instrument does not have high enough resolution to tell apart the difference in weight between you and the stamp. Or between you and you plus the stamp. But if you put it on, if you did that same thing with a high enough resolution scale, they would be different numbers. You have that resolution, and therefore you can report it in your answers. Okay, does that make sense? Does everything make sense at this point? Because if you either falsely or truly convinced yourself that you know this stuff, you're free to leave. But if you want to ask me, I'm here to stick around for a little bit more. If you want me to do any more examples or anything, that's fine. But that's all the material for today. Yeah?
Can you just give an example of like fundamental quantity? Like just, like I know, like the ones we gave, like I could tell you like which one's fundamental, which one's not.
Yes.
Furthering that, I might.
Well, for instance, what about speed? That's a quantity, right? You recognize speed as a quantity? You can measure it. Is it fundamental or derived?
Derived.
It is derived because it's made up of distance and time.
Yeah.
That's what makes it derived.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And what I was saying earlier is that area, for example, mm-hmm. is still derived even though it's made up of distance and distance.
Yeah.
It's multiple distances, though, so
okay.
It's derived.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Fundamental and derived. Fundamental is like